أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. أشهد أن محمد.
السلام عليكم. Peace be unto you. We're continuing with our series dealing with the sources of Islam. Today we have our 10th program dealing with the Quran and modern sciences. We'll be continuing our discussion of the topic of human reproduction. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid, and I have joining me as usual on the program Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Could I have you very quickly highlight and summarize the main points that we touched on in our last program dealing with the topic of human reproduction, the second program on this topic?
Sure. Two basic issues were examined in the light of the Quran. One is the reference in the Quran, especially in Surah 75, that the human is created only from a very small drop of liquid or the sperm extract, as the Quran also used elsewhere. And we tried to explain that again in the light of modern science and how we can better understand the secret of this expression in the Quran. The second issue, which was the main focus really of the program, was the fact that the Quran, especially in Surah 53 and elsewhere also, ties between the contribution of the male side, mm-hmm. or the husband, in fertilization and the determination of the sex of the fetus. And in order to appreciate the Quranic term used in that respect, we discussed briefly the role of the cells and division of the cells and the role of nucleic acid like the DNA and RNA in controlling the activities of the cell. From that explanation, it was indicated that the ovum, the female ovum, is not really the one that determines the sex of the fetus, because it always carries the X chromosome. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we have seen that some of the male sperms carry the X chromosome, some carry the Y chromosome, and it is that variation in the type of sperm which determines the nature of the child or the sex of the fetus. The main question that we have been asking throughout these programs is, how could Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, know of these things 1400 years ago, unless the Quran was actually revelation, a divine revelation?
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned last time as well that every cell contains 46 chromosomes, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. What happens to this number when the ovum is fertilized?
Okay, well, it is true that in a way you can say that the sperm and the ovum are both cells, mm-hmm. from the body also. But there are two different types of division of cell. The more common one, which is known as mitosis, means that when the completion or when the division of the cell is completed, you end up with having two identical cells, each of them having 46 chromosomes. Mm-hmm. And the reason why these cells has to be identical is actually clear from the divine wisdom of replacing the cells that die in the body. For example, it is said that every second about 2.5 million red blood cells die and are replaced. The same thing for white blood cells, the same thing for skin and other numbers also. So the total comes to close to 216 billion with the B cells that die, mm-hmm. and get replaced every day. Now, of course, it is very essential under these circumstances that the replacement cells should be identical to the one lost, or else, you get a very strange transformation in the human body. This is the more common thing. There is an exception, however. Another method of cell division, which is called meiosis, and that is especially for the reproductive cells. Because, the ovum and the sperm come actually originate from cells in the body, in the ovaries or in the testicles. And what happens is that when these cells divide and ultimately result in the ovum or the sperm, it does not carry all the chromosomes. Actually, it carries half of that number. So the ovum would have 23 chromosomes, the sperm would have 23 chromosomes. So when the sperm fertilizes the ovum, you end up having what? 46. So that, you see, you get the complete cells. This is again a clear indication of the divine wisdom in planning things so that you get again exactly the same kind of number of chromosomes in the completed cell. And this is not only important for that reason, but for something that we discussed also last time, that it is this variation in this method of division of the cell that give rise to two types of sperms. Because in the case of the ovum, even when the division take place, you still have an ovum with 23 chromosomes carrying the X, you know, characteristics. In the case of the sperm, it's quite different because you get some sperms with X chromosome, some with Y chromosome. In fact, modern research shows that it is possible to distinguish between both types of sperms. While this might not be very clear here, but you notice in the one that has the spotlight that the Y chromosome has a certain glow or light, you know, at the head, which does not appear, for example, on the other sperms that carry the X chromosome. So there is some distinction between both types of sperms that could be seen under the microscope. In fact, there are also additional research that shows that the chromosome that carries the Y, or the sperm that carries the Y chromosome rather, is faster and stronger. So there's quite a distinction between both of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, up to this point in our discussion, in our previous two programs, we spent quite a bit of time talking about the process of fertilization. Mm-hmm. What about other stages of the subsequent stages of development? Does the Quran say anything about that?
There is an amazing passage in the Quran that really was quite stunning to physicians who studied that. And that appeared in Surah 23, particularly in passages 12 through 14. وَلَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ مِنْ سُلَالَةٍ مِنْ تِينَ It says in the translation of meaning, we did create the human from an extract of clay. Then we placed him as a small drop of liquid in a firmly established lodge. Then we made that small drop of liquid into something that clings. Then we fashioned that thing that clings into a chewed lump of flesh. And we fashioned the chewed flesh into bone, and we clothed the bone with flesh that is intact flesh, as interpreted by Bouquet. Then we developed out of it another creature. So blessed be Allah, the best to create. In fact, once we analyze the contents and meaning of this passage in the Quran, it would be quite amazing for people to realize that this was not revealed a few decades ago or a few years ago, as some might think, but it was revealed 1400 years ago. In the previous program, some explanation was offered for the secret of the term sulala in the Quran, or extract, and then we tried to explain that. We have also explained in the previous program the nutfa, or the small or very small quantity of sperm or drop of liquid. That has already been covered, but it's quite amazing to notice here the varieties of terms used in this passage, especially describing the place where the fertilized ovum, as we know it, grow. And the Quran calls that a firmly established lodge, which is quite interesting from the anatomical point of view.
So, could you explain how it is firmly established?
Well, the uterus is placed in the pelvis in such a way so as to protect the fetus from outside pressure, as we see from the this following slide, number two. And this slide, by the way, was shown before when we talked about the variations in the size of the uterus. But you notice here that the uterus is firmly established It's connected with the spine and protected by it. You find also there are a number of muscles and ligaments which hold the uterus firmly in place while still allowing it to grow depending on the stage of development or growth of the fetus. In addition to this protection from outside pressure or danger, there is also an amazing process of balance in the air pressure inside the body cavity, as has been studied by physicians, which would help protect and keep the uterus and other organs for that matter in place despite of all this flexibility in their growth or change. This protection of the fetus from outside danger is further enhanced by the amniotic fluid in which the fetus floats, you might well, in the sac and surround him, so that is an additional protection also. With this kind of background that we know from science, it is indeed amazing that the Quran would use this specific expression to describe the uterus as being a place which is firmly established or firmly established. Lord, just an amazing. How could the Prophet have had any notion of this?
Mm-hmm. What happens after the fertilized ovum reaches the uterus?
Well, according to the description given in the Quran in the same passage that we quoted earlier, that the fertilized ovum becomes, as the Quran puts it, alaqa. And the proper translation of alaqa really is something that clings. And I'm emphasizing that because there are some errors in translation, including, for example, the translation of the meaning of the Quran by Yusuf Ali, where he translated as congealed blood or clot of congealed blood. This has nothing to do with the original Arabic word, which simply says alaqa, and alaqa comes from ya'laq, which means something that hangs literally clings. This Quranic description of that stage is again amazing, because it was not clearly understood until recently, when it was found that the fertilized ovum, when it comes from the fallopian tubes into the uterus, literally implants itself or clings in the wall of the uterus or the endometrium. Mm-hmm. So it really literally hangs or clings in that stage of the embryonic development.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that you've brought along a few slides that deal with this as well. Could you share those with us perhaps at this time?
Sure. Let me just say one word and then I'll show you a couple of slides that may illustrate the point. You see, the way that the fertilized ovum implants itself in the or clings in the uterus from inside is basically through the development of something they call velocities. The velocities acts more or less like the roots of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, to maintain or keep the ovum or fertilized ovum in place so that it won't fall, but more importantly, it almost like eats or gets itself intermingled with the cells of the uterus so as to draw the necessary nutrients. Mm-hmm. Which are needed for the growth of the fetus. Now let's look at some of those illustration. In this slide here, slide 3, we notice that this is actually a very rare shot taken inside a uterus after the fertilized ovum came to it. And that is only a few hours, really, after it came to the uterus. That is about 7.5 days after fertilization, because you see the fertilized ovum takes somewhere between 5 to 7 days to move from the fallopian tube to the uterus.
Mm-hmm.
In the second photograph, it shows again a very early embryo which is just about 12 years old. That is after fertilization, or
well,
5 days.
Hmm? Well.
Oh, sorry, 12 days. Yes. Yeah, sorry, 12 days old. That is about 5 days after it started to cling into the uterus. And in that, the scientist also noted that there are two types of cells, at least. There is the external type of cells, which act to hold the fertilized ovum or get fused with the uterus. And then there is also the internal cells from which the fetus is to be created by Allah. In that following illustration, you notice another type of clinging. You notice it's almost like a rope or something that's holding, you know, these parts. Actually, it's connected. It's called the connecting stalk. So, in a way, again, the description of clinging or hanging is something which is really amazing in a variety of stages. It's a very, very meticulous description. And against this background, we may ask, was the use of the term something that clings in the Quran a matter of coincidence?
Highly improbable. This expression, something that clings, does it appear in other instances in the Quran over and above the one that we've just referred to?
Yes, it does. In fact, in addition to the passage we mentioned earlier, that's 23:12-14, we find again that the same term, alaqa, or something that clings, appear in 22:5, in 40:67, in 75 passages, 37 and 38, and also in the very first passage that was revealed to Prophet Muhammad while meditating in the cave of Hira, that's 96. In the first five passages. And perhaps let me just recite that, because to give, number one, to give one additional documentation, and because of it's a very interesting meticulous description, just like the passage that we quoted before. اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق. It says that read, that is read or recite, O Muhammad, in the name of your Lord and Cherisher who created humankind out of something that clings, min alaq, out of something that clings. Read, and your Lord is most bountiful. He who taught the use of the pen taught humankind that which he knew not. So the Quran is quite clear that, number one, the usage of the term cling is repeated in several passages, number one. Number two, it shows that that stage happens after the nutfa, or the fertilized ovum, which is the very correct description, both time-wise and the nature of implantation, if you will, of the ovum.
Well, could we go on perhaps to the next stage of development? And I wonder if, in doing so, if you could perhaps address it from both the Quranic and the scientific standpoint.
Okay. First of all, the Quran says that it is nutfa, small quantity of liquid. Then it says alaqa, something that clings. And then the term appears in the Quran in the same surah we refer to, 23, alaqa. ثُمَّ خَلَقْنَا الْعَلَقَةَ مُضْغَةً. It becomes, or this thing that or that thing that clings becomes mudgha. The word mudgha in Arabic could have two meanings, related meanings, in fact. One is something that one can chew, that is very small size, that one even can put in his mouth, very small. But the more correct meaning, actually, is that mudgha, it's something that is being chewed. That's why in more correct translations of this passage in the Quran, it says a chewed lump of flesh, for example. Now, the other question that you raised, how could modern science help us to understand the depth of this Quranic expression? In answering that question, we can perhaps refer to the following slide, that is number 6. In that slide, we notice that there appears to be something similar to the marks of teeth. This is actually an actual picture of an embryo which is only 24 days old. Only 24 days. And you notice here there are certain, you know, marks that appear as if they are, or they were chewed, or that they were some kind of teeth actually chewing that particular flesh or piece of flesh. It's an amazing description. Like I said, you can't really, you can say so much about it, but once you look at the illustration, which is an actual picture, one can appreciate the depths of that Quranic expression. Again, the question here, could Prophet Muhammad have been the author of the Quran 1400 years ago, saying this kind of things and describing this meticulous description?
This term chewed flesh, is it the only term that is used in the Quran to describe this particular stage of development?
No, there is also an additional description. For example, we find in Surah 22, especially in passage 5, it describes also this chewed lump of flesh as mudghatin mukhallaqatin wa ghayri mukhallaqa. The translation of these words, or the description of that chewed flesh, can be either in proportion and out of proportion. That could be one meaning. It could also mean partly formed and partly unformed. It's possible meaning also, and it's not contradictory with it. A third meaning actually is differentiated and undifferentiated. Dr. Muhammad Al-Barr describes some of these in detail in terms of modern knowledge of medicine, that all of these could actually apply and are correct interpretation of the meaning مُخَلَّقَةٍ وَغَيْرِ مُخَلَّقَةٍ. Let me just, for shortness of time, give one of those illustrations. If you take, let's say, the first meaning, which is it means in proportion and out of proportion. And it is noted here, as we see in the following slide, number 7, that in a certain stage of the embryonic development, you notice that the body or the fetus is really out of proportion. In other words, you notice, for example, that maybe the hands, the back might be somewhat both in reasonable proportion. However, you notice, for example, that the head is more than one-third, perhaps more than one-third of the body. And as the embryo develops further, the proportionality becomes more evident. So this could be a possible reference also to the Quranic description, in proportion and out of proportion, at least in some stage.
Now, what happens in the subsequent stages to those that we've just been describing?
Well, if we refer back again to the passage, it talks that after the stage, which is called a chewed lump of flesh, we find that it says that it becomes bones, that it grow into, or the bones are formed, and that's again consistent with what scientists have found out, that the bones are closed with flesh, because again the initial bone structure, for example, between the 5th and 6th week, some of those bone structures join together and constitute the skull, for example, start to take shape. And then the Quran says that these are closed with flesh. And again, scientists tell us that in the weeks 6 to 7 weeks of pregnancy or the embryonic stage, we find that the muscles begin to develop. And then finally, it's interesting to notice that the ayah or that passage end by saying that then we created, that is the human, or made him into another creature. And that is quite an interesting expression, and we can appreciate that more perhaps if we examine some of the slides. I don't know if we have time for them.
Yes, I believe we have several minutes remaining. Could you perhaps take us through those?
Okay, perhaps if we examine that the first slide here, that shows again or emphasizes the point that we mentioned earlier about mudghatin mukhallaqatin wa ghayri mukhallaqa, in proportion and out of proportion. This is actually a back view of a fetus, and you might say, where is the head? The upper part is all the neck, in fact, because the head is just leaning to the front. And then you notice that these two little buds on the side are actually the beginning of the formation of the the arms, and the legs, of course, again appear to be just beginning towards the end or the lower part of the body. And the next one, we notice here again a very nice illustration of what the Quran says, that then we created him into, or made him into, another creature. Because this one shows the various embryonic stages of the human, which appears on the left-hand side, versus other animals, like rabbits, chicks, for example, the last one is the development of the fish. And if you look at it, you notice that in the first row, on the upper row, it is very difficult to distinguish between the embryo of the human, the rabbit, the chick, or the fish, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
In the second stage, the fish seem to be quite distinct. If you look on the right-hand side, it becomes quite different. But the other animals are quite similar to the embryo of the human. In the lower part, however, that is where the distinct features of each of these animals, vis-a-vis the human, of course, become quite distinct. In the next slide, we notice that there's an illustration of the various stages of development combined together in one picture, if you will, going through various stages of development. The biggest one actually is simply 12 weeks, that's the little fellow in the lower right hand side, and the bigger fellow there is only 16 weeks old. The next slide is a beautiful shot, an actual shot of an embryo who is only 42 days old, and you might wonder how big that might be, and it's only 1.5 centimeters. 1.5 centimeter. And if you look on the top of the head there, you can see the brain being formed just immediately under the chin. There is the heart. Immediately under that there is the livers, and on both sides of the heart you notice the budding of the beginning of the hands, formation of the hands. The fingers even might not be that distinct, but they began just to take some shape. In the following one is an embryo in the 8th week. We notice again that the features of the human has not crystallized fully yet, and that is still inside the amniotic sac. In the following one, you notice the gradual growth and development of the toes, or the, you know, the feet and the hands, and that one is in the 8th week. The following one shows an embryo in the 9th week of development. Now the features of a human began to be more distinct, even though it's not very obvious. For example, the nose looks very small and tiny. And the next one is an actual photograph inside the womb of a fetus sucking his finger.
Mm-hmm.
You might ask when. 4.5 months. Imagine, 4.5 months, and he's doing that already. In the next one, it's an even more interesting one, because he's holding the umbilical cord. In the following slide, there is a comparison between the development of the fetus. One is the 5th month, the bigger one, the one in, and the other one is in the 8th week or 2nd month. In the second one, of course, the older fellow, you notice that the features of the face became more distinct. In the next one, we have an actual shot of a fetus who is 5.5 months old. He looks like thinking, like Dr. Barr suggests, what is he going to do after he comes out of there? The following one is a fetus who seems to be happy, smiling. That shows again that they do react and understand things. And you notice also there is some kind of writing, as if there is marks in his forehead. The next one is again about 5.5 months, as if he's scratching, and that's why there is a sort of fatty layers there to protect him, because actually the fingernails begin to grow at this time. In that last one, we got the little fellow already after coming to this world. It's amazing when you look at this to remember what the Quran says in Surah 39 in passage 6, that Allah creates you creation after creation in three darkness.
Mm-hmm. Very fascinating. We want to thank you very much, Brother Jamal. We want to thank you for watching. Our time, unfortunately, for today has gone. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.